When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Fort McMurray Matters, keeping you connected to our community.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
Hello and welcome to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. On today's show, the Alberta Teachers Association has some concerns with the new social studies curriculum from the Alberta government. I chat with President Jason Schilling on the matter. I also speak with Michelle Hand from the Wood Buffalo Food Bank on the spring food drive that was deemed a success over the weekend. And lastly, Krista Dickey joins the show to talk about International Female Ride Day and the event coming up this weekend in Fort McMurray. Joining me on the phone here today, Jason Schilling, the president of the Alberta Teachers Association. Jason, how's it going here today?
I'm doing well today, thank you.
That's good to hear. Jason, you're calling for a delay to the social studies curriculum rollout. What concerns do you have with it?
Well, we have a variety of concerns as teachers and association about the rollout of the K-6 curriculum. The first one is that the curriculum is just not ready for implementation to be in front of students. We still have many concerns about the scope, the sequence, the content, and just how it's going to roll out on top of our teachers already dealing with the busyness of dealing with a new math curriculum, English curriculum, and science curriculum as well.
How were teachers and educators consulted in the development of these curriculum changes, if at all?
Well, teachers were involved in sort of consulting on the curriculum after the fact. And that's been the point of the association since the initial release of the curriculum in 2021, that teachers needed to be involved in the writing of the curriculum from the very beginning. They have a strong understanding and expertise level of how students learn and what would be the best sequence to learn, and how these new concepts should be introduced in a way that makes sense, that so that students aren't struggling with them. There's been some consultation sort of after the fact, what do you think about these things? And the association gave government 13 recommendations that we saw in the draft that was released in March of what needed to be addressed before it would be implemented in the fall. We only had 17 working days before the draft was released again, and very little of the suggestions and recommendations from the association on the draft were actually included or addressed.
Yeah, in your news release, you mentioned there are concerns with the concepts covered. What are those primary concerns the ATA has with those concepts?
Well, subject matter load is really heavy throughout this curriculum. There are a lot of things for kids to learn in a very short amount of time, and we worry that with a lot of content, you lose time for students to think about the critical nature of why are they learning things, and not just memorizing facts so that they can move on to the next grade. So, for instance, grade 4 had a lot of content within it, and it was reduced a little bit, but grade 5 and grade 6 are still rather content heavy. For instance, grade 5, there's 80 knowledge items that students need to learn on top of understandings and skills and procedures, and there's only about 200 school days a year for kids to learn all that. It's a lot. We're also concerned about the fact that the revision doesn't reflect our recommendations that follow, that call on the Truth and Reconciliation recommendations, the calls to action that residential schools be taught in elementary school, and those don't appear until grade 7.
In what ways do these changes to the social studies curriculum conflict with the educational goals for students? I know you mentioned some in that previous answer, but maybe just elaborate on that.
Well, definitely. When you look at the curriculum as the draft is moving forward, for instance, kindergarten grade one students will learn about community. And then in grade two, the curriculum has them learning about Canada. And then in grade three, they learn about Alberta. And sequentially, that doesn't make much sense. You would normally go from your community to your province and then your country and then follow through that. And so that's part of the sequence of building on the prerequisite knowledge that students have from, you know, the community. We're dealing with a lot of our students who've never actually been out of their cities and don't even recognize, you know, if they went to Kelowna that they went to a different province. And so it's working your way through those details that make sense in a sequence and a logical sort of progression of learning. And part of our concern with this curriculum is that it jumps around and it's disjointed in that manner.
Do you feel there could be some potential unintended consequences with these changes that they could lead to?
Definitely. And the reason why we're calling for a delay is because we've seen this happen with the math curriculum. The math curriculum brought concepts down from higher grades into lower grades, and the students don't have the prerequisite knowledge as they move through the curriculum, which has caused a lot of tears by students, frustration. I've talked to some of my colleagues who I think are also experiencing some tears and frustration, and definitely have heard from parents who are frustrated with the math curriculum. We don't want to see the same mistakes made through that rushed implementation of math again with social studies. Teachers want to make sure that the curriculum is implemented in a way that is successful for students and for teachers and their families, and not be marred down with a bunch of problems like we're seeing right now with math.
What are the next steps for the ATA on this?
We'll continue to advocate with government about seeing the recommendations that we put forward changed in the draft curriculum. We'll also have to work with government in trying to make sure that teachers have time for professional development and to look at the resources for themselves and for their students. It takes quite a bit of time. But I'm also concerned about the burnout of the impact on the teachers who are implementing this as a pilot, because they're also dealing with new language arts, new science, new mathematics, new Francophone curriculums as well. And so it's a lot to be asking the same group of people to be implementing a new curriculum year after year after year. It's traditionally done on a cycle that is a little bit more planned out.
And what would your message be to parents on this? Because obviously they'd be concerned with what their kids are learning, and they've already had concerns about the math curriculum as well.
Definitely, and I think they need to keep working with their teachers to make sure that they're finding solutions. But I would encourage parents also to talk to their MLAs about the curriculum and their elected folks, because ultimately government is the one who is responsible for curriculum, and those concerns need to be shared with their MLAs. This just happens to be constituency week, so MLAs should be back in their community. So it's a great time to make an appointment and go in and talk to them about your concerns around the rushed nature of the curriculum.
Jason Schilling, the president of the Alberta Teachers Association. Anything else you'd like to add here today?
Well, you know, teachers really want to make sure that the curriculum that we're putting in place in our students, you know, reflects the modern, diverse nature of our students in our province. And it's really important for us to get this right so that we don't cause any kind of harm or damage to our students moving forward. And so we'll continue to do this work and advocate to make sure that we get it right.
Jason, always great to have you on the show here. Thank you so much for your time here today.
You bet. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to Fort McMurray Matters. We'll have more for you after the break.
We're back to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
And welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Joining me on the phone here today, Michelle Hand from the Wood Buffalo Food Bank. Michelle, how's it going here today?
It's great, Ryan, and yourself?
Doing well. Michelle, that spring food drive wrapped up over the weekend. How did this event go?
Absolutely. We had an incredible spring food drive over April 27th to 28th. We had our trucks parked at all of the local grocery stores, and we were very proud to collect 20,500 pounds of food and $20,000.
Now, does that mean the food bank reached their goal for this year?
Unfortunately, we didn't reach our goal, but with the current economic climate, we really understand that not everyone is able to give as much as they used to. So we're really taking this one as a win, just with how many people were able to donate. And we're serving so many more families this year, so we did expect it to be lower numbers this year. But again, we're very much taking it as a successful food drive, regardless of the goals not being met.
Give us a sense on how important this food drive is for the Wood Buffalo Food Bank. How far does this take you?
So there used to be a time where we only had the one food drive, and it lasted the majority of the year. When that was no longer the case, we brought in our spring food drive. That is now, we're on our 10th annual year. And that typically used to bring us to our fall food drive. So what we collected in the food drives would typically last the majority of the year. Unfortunately, with the amount of people that are accessing our services now, the amount of food that was collected will last us approximately a month and a half. Of the food that is going out to our clients. So it's unfortunate that we're serving as many clients as we are, but having food drives like this really helps ease some of that extra fundraising that we would need to do.
How did the community respond to the food drive this spring compared to previous years?
So our volunteer was down a little bit. I do believe that it was just because there's so many people that are working extra jobs just to be able to, you know, make ends meet. But we had some incredible volunteers. A lot of people were out there. They were enthusiastic to be volunteering. They were enthusiastic to be able to donate to us. And we are incredibly proud of all of our volunteers, the sponsors, and of course, every single person that took the time out of their day to donate.
Yeah, I read in that news release that there was a number of organizations and volunteers that helped contribute to this food drive. How did those partnerships lead to a successful food drive again this year?
So I'm going to touch on a couple for us. So Summit GM has provided all of their trucks. So they give us 10 vehicles that we park outside of the stores. And Summit is so gracious. They, you know, they insure the trucks for us. They fuel all the trucks prior. And then, of course, they fuel them afterwards as well. So it really eases the burden of that extra, that amount that we would have to do to actually get that amount of vehicles parked outside. So big thanks to Summit. And then we had Coverall, who was one of our bag sponsors. So instead of us having to go and purchase all of the bags that the food goes into, and then also the food that goes out to our clients, we utilize these bags throughout the year. So Coverall came on for their second year of bag sponsorship. And then we had Superheat, that was another bag sponsor. They were on Sunday. It's their first year, but they've actually funded some other stuff for us as well. So huge thanks to them, as well as the Fort McMurray Giants gave all of our volunteers a free ticket to one of the games for their season. Typically, we give volunteer gifts for anyone that volunteers, but it actually costs us money to be able to do so. So the Giants coming on this year, not only was an incredible donation, but also saved the food bank quite a bit of money by just coming out and doing that for free. And what a great opportunity for a family that volunteers to then go and enjoy it in a family activity together. We had Evermore Cookie that came on and gave us a great deal on some branded cookies to keep everyone fueled and fed throughout the weekend. And of course, our title sponsor, Service Credit Union, they have been our title sponsor for the past 10 years. And we honestly could not be able to hold this without them.
With the spring food drive now concluded, what are the next steps for distributing the donated items to those who need them?
Absolutely. So as the food comes in, all of our appointments For our clients, they are appointment-based. So you would just contact the Wood Buffalo Food Bank. You get in for an appointment. They're monthly hampers, so that food will be going out over the next month and a half, 2 months, to all of our clients in need.
What's next for food and or donation drives for the food bank in the next little while?
So again, we're going to have our Syncrude food drive. This will be the 32nd annual year. I can't believe I'm saying that. It's been going on for so incredibly long. But we're also going to have quite a few different third-party food drives. We have a local counselor that is going to do a Mother's Day food drive. We have a couple different school and sport team organizations that do food drives for us. So you might see not as large as our spring and fall food drives, where we're at every local grocery store and superstore and Walmart. But some of the smaller ones that they've reached out to a grocery store and they're going to have their trucks out during the day. So we're continuously getting third-party food drive opportunities. So if you or, you know, a group, you would like to, you know, do a third-party food drive, we'd love to be able to assist and help out. It's a great way to bring the, you know, your group together and give back to the community in a very significant way.
And when it comes to donating to the food bank, what are some of those not-so-common items the food bank is in need of throughout the year?
So believe it or not, we sometimes we run a little bit low on some of those items that you wouldn't think of. So I'm saying diapers, sizes 5 to 6, coffees, teas, that sort of thing. We give those out in every hamper, but it's not something that's always on the top of the mind when you're thinking of donating. We also love to see larger donations of things that we can actually split up. So large bags of rice, large bags of flour. When you buy a really large bag of something, we're able to split it up into very small portions, or not very small, but smaller portions to be able to give to more people in need. Buying in bulk is a great opportunity for a local food bank.
Absolutely. How can people donate throughout the year, Michelle?
So there's lots of different ways. The first that we are really pushing right now is our monthly donor program. So we're calling it our Hunger Hero program, where if you just give $5 a month, you become part of our coffee club, and it's a subscription-based program. $5 a month is less than a fancy cup of coffee here in town, and if we get 10,000 people to donate or sign up for that program, we really won't have to worry too much about a lot of these like larger funding opportunities, as well as if you just are cleaning out your pantry and you have some items that you might just not use, you can drop them off at any local grocery store in the pickup bins or right with us at our food bank. As well as if you would like to donate just money and not be part of our local clubs, there's our Donate Now link right on our website, our Facebook pages, all those sorts of things. Also, we're going to have some other events that are coming up this year. By just attending these events or coming out for these, you know, family fun events, it's a great way to also give back.
Michelle Henn from the Wood Buffalo Food Bank, thank you so much for the time here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan.
We'll be back with more next here on Fort McMurray Matters.
We're back to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
And we're back on Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Joining me on the phone here today is Krista Dickey, a Ladies of Harley officer. Krista, how's it going here today?
Great. How are you?
Doing well. Krista, what should we know about International Female Ride Day coming up on Saturday?
So this is something I'm actually fairly new to. The Motorists, Women Motorcycle Enthusiasts, is a global group. Primarily, they want to just encourage women to get out and enjoy their bikes. Get out and ride is a hashtag, or just ride is a hashtag, sorry. So the first Saturday of every year, they hold this event, which is called International Female Ride Day. It's global, and anywhere around the world there are various events. What our local Harley-Davidson dealership, Voight Harley-Davidson, is supporting this and hosting our ride this year. And they're also offering a sale on the items, women's items in the store. And we're holding a barbecue that is going to be manned by the local Harley Owners Group members. And proceeds from that will be going to their annual charity for the Toys for Tots as well.
This is the 18th edition of the international version of the ride. How many years has an event been going on in Fort McMurray?
I am not 100% sure of that. This is my first year back in Fort McMurray, and it is I'm just into my second year of actually motorcycling. So I'm not sure how many, if they've ever actually done it before. I was talking with Erin Boyd at Voight, and she had come across it and said, hey, this would be something we would like to support. How about you? I said, sure.
Hey, fair enough. What's the female motorcycle community like in Fort McMurray as a whole?
As a whole, I know within the Harley Owners Group, we have a great group of women. There are a number of women who ride their bikes individually, such as myself, and there are quite a few women who also ride two-up with their significant others. Either way, everybody is a fantastic group of people, super friendly, and just love to get out and feel the wind in their face on their bikes. There are numerous women that I have seen on other Facebook pages for Alberta Motorcycling that do ride up here, so I've connected a little bit with them and then encouraged them to come on out and join us as well.
Can you share your experience as a female rider and, you know, what is a male-dominated activity?
Well, like I said, I just got into it last year, really. I've always wanted to have a Harley-Davidson. I rode dirt bikes a little bit off and on in my younger years. But I went and purchased a Harley-Davidson without having a license, so I took a rider's course and totally fell in love. I got on the bike with the group last May long weekend and rode from Wandering River to Fort McMurray. It was my first ride, and really, I was just grinning. They were a super cool bunch that met me. They said, how long have you been riding? And I said, 5 minutes. So since then, I just got out and rode every opportunity I could get. Last July, I got my license, and I promptly rode down to Wandering River in Athabasca, and everywhere I go with my bike, other people with their bikes are like, hey, come and join us. Come tell us your story. And then you start swapping stories about your motorcycles and where you've been and how many miles you get on. So it doesn't matter if you're male or female with motorcycles, I find. They just love it, and they love that you're doing it as well.
So it sounds to me like it's a very inclusive activity.
For the most part, my experience has been super inclusive, yeah.
Have you faced any challenges, with, motorcycle ownership, ridership, and how have you overcome them?
Very few obstacles, really, for me. I bought my first bike just over a year ago. It was used, and I had been living down in the Calgary area at the time, so Calgary dealership had helped me out with that. They didn't care that I'd purchased a used bike. They were happy to help me out and service it, and then tips on riding, tips on gear. Then when I came up here and brought my bike, the Voight Harley-Davidson dealership, same thing, walk in the door, and they're just like, hey, how's it going? You're new to biking? Awesome. Got questions? Help you out. Need gear? Help you out. The group that I ride with, as a new rider, there were some habits that I didn't have and incorrect ways of riding, that a couple of them noticed and said, hey, we need to help you out with that before you have an accident. So, that's been basically it. They're just everybody's wanting to help everybody out to make sure you have a safe and enjoyable ride.
In what ways do you think events like International Female Ride Day empower women to, get on the bike?
I think it's more like it's like events that are popping up globally for women nowadays. It is just saying, hey, yes, this has been primarily a men's kind of sport, if you will, but we don't care. We got lots of women doing it. So let's get out and say, hey, don't be intimidated, gals. If you want to ride a bike, come and ride a bike. And so what we're hoping with this event is to join in and encourage all the gals out there who, even if they don't have a bike, come out to Void Harley-Davidson on Saturday, have a look around and talk to the people at the shop, and ask your questions and see if it's something you want to get into.
What impact do you hope International Female Ride Day will have on the future of motorcycling, particularly for women getting involved?
Well, I hope that it's going to show women who have maybe a little bit of an interest in it but are a little worried about it, maybe a little scared about it or intimidated. It's not anything to be worried about anymore. There are really no boundaries. It doesn't matter what bike you start on, whether it's a small bike or a big bike, whether it's a Harley or a Honda, it doesn't matter. The sport, the bikes, it's all about getting out and having the wind in your face. And there's a freedom about it that is not the same as you get when you just go on a road trip in your car. So I'm hoping that locally, exposure will show women that we have a great group of people to come and ride with. And if you don't want to ride by yourself, there's people to ride with. And there's people to answer your questions.
We did talk about it a little earlier on, Krista, but maybe just talk about that event coming up on Saturday in Fort McMurray. Obviously, you know, barbecue going on, but there's a lot of different things going on for folks that want to learn more about riding motorcycles and owning motorcycles.
You bet. So Voight Harley-Davidson up on Craigwire Drive there is sponsoring or hosting the event, I guess I should say, this year. And as it's a women's focus day, they're offering a sale on women's items in the shop. Everybody that's working that day, everybody that's going to be showing up for the event, if you have questions, if you have any interest whatsoever, come on out. You can come out during the store hours. It doesn't even have to be when the barbecue starts. So come on out, talk to the people in the front of the shop, talk to them in the service department and ask them about having bike serviced. Just get any questions that you have answered, and look at all the gear we've got. That's really fun. I mean, who doesn't like leather? and then just talk to all the people that do come out, have the bikes, and are going to join us for the ride. We're having an open ride, leaving the parking lot at Void Harley-Davidson at 1:00. I will be leading that ride. Again, it's a focus on women, so we're gonna encourage all the women to get up to the front, and we're gonna head north from town up to the Giants of Mining, have a quick stop up there, and do some chatting about the bikes, who's got what, and how many miles they've got on, and who's new, and who's seasoned riders. So, and then we'll come on back to Voight Harley-Davidson, and I think we'll just have a lot of fun to help people that don't have bikes but are interested to get more information that way.
Awesome, Krista. We're looking forward to that event. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the show here today.
Cool. Thanks for your time. And if anybody has any other questions, they can also call Boyd Harley-Davidson, talk to Aaron Boyd.
That does it for my show today, folks. Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in, and thank you to my guests for joining me on the program today. Tomorrow's show will be reacting to the Trans Mountain Pipeline project finally reaching its completion. We hear from Mayor Sandy Bowman. We hear from Diana D'Souza, the Executive Director of the Fort McMurray Chamber of Commerce, and we will hear from your local MLA, Brian Jean, who is the Minister of Energy and Minerals for the Alberta government. He'll have lots of nice things to say about this project finally reaching its completion. Thank you so much for listening to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Ryan McNally. Have yourself a great day.
That's the end of another edition of Fort McMurray Matters.
Want a copy of this or any past episodes? Download the podcast at play1037.ca. Brought to you by Cooper and Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics
on Play 103.